because the recording used to do that.
Yes, right.
Live.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Are we live on Facebook and YouTube now?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. We need.
Show me on here.
Once we settle on somebody, too, we need to change all of these Blog Talk Radio things. And
yeah, I still have BTR on that
new business cards.
Oh.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah,
we have BTR on. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So, just got the notice from YouTube. Says you're live.
I need to change those.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. No. So it is 7 something.
Right.
We are live on March the 20th. Ready to go.
First day of spring. 5:01 this morning, I think it became spring. Well, that's when the sun officially passed the equator.
I didn't notice it. But
yeah, I didn't either.
Are we supposed to feel something when that happens?
A little tingle, something. I'm not sure, you know.
Yeah.
We should. I don't know. What is it, the spring equinox? It has to be something cool too, like autumn is the autumnal equinox. Yep. But spring is just spring. It seemed like it should be a fancy name or something. So but this morning, so now it's and what is it tomorrow? What, today's the 20th, 21st. Well, baseball season's already started because there's a couple of games played over in Japan by American teams. I think the Dodgers and somebody else went over there and played a couple of games. Dodgers and Chicago Cubs. And so that started the season, but the official season, I believe, starts tomorrow with a full schedule. So that's here. So it's official baseball season, which means that it's going to be warm now. We don't have to worry about any more snow or cold mornings or anything. No, that's good. And what else is going on? Nothing. So we'll go. Excuse me. So we will go into. Oh, let's see, the glossary. Let's do a little bit of the glossary to start with here, and then we can. Well, it looks like if you're listening to us on Facebook or YouTube, we are leaning toward Restream as our new platform. It has been an ongoing process for us trying to find one that will satisfy our needs. And as of right now, Restream is getting the most points. So we will hopefully have it as a permanent home pretty soon here, or if all of a sudden one jumps up and says, hey, I'm better than anybody, we'll use them. But as it stands now, Restream seems to be able to do everything we want it to do
so far.
All right, Composite Cork, I believe, is the next one on our list. Yes, it is, because the one before that was Complexity, and we did that last. So, Composite Cork. This is also known as an now I started to say it wrong and I can't say it right. Agglomerated. Boy. Agglomerated. Agglomerated. There, that's closer than I'll get. Cork. Wine bottle stopper made of particles or granules of natural cork pressed together and bound by an FDA-approved glue. Composite cork. A lot of wineries use composite cork. They're a lot cheaper, and they work just as well as regular corks for short term. I don't think you're going to use an amalgamated cork for long-term aging. It's not wise, but for short term, they serve their purpose. I used quite a few of the composite corks for a while, but then I started running into problems with them in the fact that when I was putting them into the bottle, they were so soft, they weren't going all the way into the bottle, which was a royal pain because you can't pull them out and reinsert them. So I, for a while there, I was cutting off half the cork on half the bottle. So it was a short cork in the bottles. Served its purpose because the wines I was making were made to be drank anyway, so you're not going to age those. But they're pretty soft, and you got to be careful if you're using a machine to put them in. It might be too soft for the plunger, or whatever you want to call it, that pops the cork inside it. I was using a hand corking, and that was almost impossible. I was setting another cork on top of it, trying different ways to do it. I went crazy with it, and it was one batch of the composite corks that I ended up with that did that. I got another batch, and they were fine. So, all right, story there. Cooked, C-O-O-K-E-D, cooked. This describes a dull, stewed flavor associated with wines adversely affected by excessive heat during shipping or storage. I venture to say that everybody's probably had a cooked wine, not realizing that it is, because the way we ship wines around this country, there are certain wineries that will not ship in the summer because of the heat, and they don't want their wines to be affected. But others don't care. They'll ship it to you anytime. And the shipping companies don't care. They will put it in a truck and let it set in a truck and finally get it out to you. Delivery trucks and stuff like this are horrible about that, or shipping it across country and things. So cooked wine, if you get that taste, that's a cooked wine. Cooper, that is a wine barrel maker. Cooperage being the facility where wine barrels are made. Like I said earlier, I need to get a cooper and a cooperage onto the show so we can talk about it. Next one, cooperative. This is a wine company that is owned and managed by a group of vineyard owners who bottle their wine under one label, sharing the profits. Wine cooperatives are typically associated with cheaper, often bulk wine. Except in the early days of port, and I don't know, I think maybe somewhat in port now. Port has always been ran by a conglomerate of growers, and that doesn't particularly mean that they're cheap. The system that they use is a good system, and they all pool their resources and all that to do it. It's all back from the days where the growers didn't really own their grapes and vineyards. They were all under servitude, if you will. Corvin. This is an appliance. In fact, I have a Corvin here. an appliance that allows wine to be removed from an unopened bottle of wine, the hollow needle. You stick this needle in there and you pump a little bit of air into it, and it, the only thing that gives is the cork, because that's the easiest thing to give with the air, extra air in there, and pops the cork out of the bottle. And you can pour and then pound the cork back in there again, and you're good to go for a while yet, because when you do it that way, it preserves the wine. You're not using up all the wine. It preserves the wine, and it's a good way to save the wine if you want to. Doesn't really damage cork, just put a little hole in it. Cordon train, C-O-R-D-O-N. This refers to a method of vine training. Cordon trained vines are supported by a trellising system. Typically one or two cordons or branches are trained horizontally out of the main trunk. You've seen pictures of this. I know you have. If you're a wine drinker and you've looked at anything in wines, you've seen a picture of the main grapevine coming up, the trunk coming up, and then going off from that is two in each direction, two clusters of vines, and then the grapes dangling down from that. That is cordon trained. Corkage fee. This is the fee charged by restaurants when guests bring their own bottle of wine rather than ordering from the wine list. An interesting thing about corkage fees can range anywhere from $10 up to $150. And I'm serious, $150 for corkage fee if you bring your own wine. Some of the fancy restaurants in New York have a markup of 5 times the normal retail value of a wine. Yes, 5 times, which is staggering. But if you go in and you order a bottle of wine that is normally $50 at your local wine shop, in the restaurant, you're spending close to $250 for it. If you take in your own wine, so they're not getting that big markup, they're going to charge you $150, $200 for a corkage fee. Not many, but it happens. If you have a special occasion, if you are looking at going to a restaurant that serves wine, and you have a particular wine that is dear to you, and you are going to share it with the people in the group or your special other, and you want to take that with you, call the restaurant first and ask them if they have a corkage fee. Some of them do, some of them don't. Some are minimal, some of them are a little bit higher. But don't walk in and say, I brought my wine, can you open it for me? Or do you have a corkscrew I can borrow? It does not go over well. Call, and most of the time they will accommodate as much as they possibly can. Except if the wine is on their list, then don't do that. Buy it off their list. But if it's one that is a little rare or something like that, call them and ask them what their corkage fee is and ask them if you can bring a bottle in. Just courtesy, basically. Corked, C-O-R-K-E-D. This describes a wine having the off-putting, musty, moldy newspaper flavor and aroma and dry aftertaste caused by a tainted wine. A lot of people have tasted corked wines not knowing what it is. It's a problem with wines that are not handled properly during storage and shipment and all that. You can find a corked wine. You can also find a corked wine with the cork being bad. Most of the time, that's where you're going to find a problem with the cork being bad. It's different degrees of what I just read to you there as descriptions. Some of them can be lighter, but I've had wines that were corked and I could barely tell. But the person I was with, who was very knowledgeable in it, said this wine is corked. And I'm going, oh, so that's what I'm looking at then. It was, never experienced it before. I've had some that just jump out at me. I'm going, oh my gosh, this wine is just nasty. It's terribly corked. So it doesn't always, it says here, off-putting, musty, moldy newspaper flavors and aromas. It doesn't always come out real strong like all that. Sometimes it is very subtle and it can be corked. So pay attention. But most of the time, if a wine is corked, it is from the cork itself. Next one, Cosecha, C-O-S-E-C-H-A, Cosecha. It's Spanish for vintage. I never knew that. Probably pronounced it wrong anyway. The next one has a pronunciation for me. Let's see. Coeur. C-O-U-L-U-R-E. Coeur. This is also known as shatter. Coeur or shatter. During flowering in the spring, wind and rain, as well as chemical deficiencies, can keep a grapevine flowers from being properly fertilized, causing these flowers to drop off the cluster. This dropping of flowers is called couleur. Since each flower is responsible for a grape, the clusters of grapes that eventually forms is loose and missing grapes. If the improperly fertilized flower stays attached, it produces a puny, seedless grape called a shot grape. You know, like a buckshot or something, reference. Although the yield is reduced, there is a corresponding benefit. Loose grapes that allow for increased air circulation are less susceptible to rot in human conditions. Humid conditions. So this is why when, especially France, they have been having problems, I think more so in the last 10 years than I ever heard about before then, but they've been having having problems with hail storms coming through during flowering season. And this causes couture, or the shattering of the flowers. It causes a bunch to drop off, and they can save some of them, but not all of them. Hail storms come in so quickly and so strong over there that they do lose a lot of flowers, and it cuts down. This is why hail storms are so critical at the beginning of the season during flowering, because it can knock off all the flowers. And like this said here, each flower represents a grape. So when you have a bunch of flowers together and the hailstorm comes through and knocks off half of them, it causes a shortage of grapes. So that's why hailstorms are so critical over in France. And they've been having more than their fair share in the spring over the last 4 or 5 years. Well, I guess more than that, the last 10 years. Cover crop. This is additional vegetation planted in the vineyards to cover the ground and better control erosion, soil quality, disease, and other agricultural factors. Examples of cover crops include sorghum, red clover, and ryegrass. Between the rows, you see pictures of a vineyard that's all nice and pretty and the grapes are growing. You look in between, you see this nice pretty green between each of the rows. Cover crop helps control moisture and all sorts of stuff. It's good stuff. You know, cover crops are used. I don't think any of them are ever harvest. Some of them let chickens loose in them, goats, different things. At the end of the season, after they picked, they'll let them go in and eat the cover crop, but it's not a common thing unless, well, biodynamic will let the sheep in. Okay, let's see how to pronounce this. Crianza. Crianza, one of Spain's quality classifications. All right, there you go. I mean, we have the French classifications. This is one of Spain's quality classifications, Crianza. It requires that reds are aged for 2 years with at least a year in wood, and whites required to a total of 6 months. So that's the Crianza classification in Spain. I don't know if it's on the bottle or not. Interesting. I've never paid attention. If Mike weren't so busy doing all the other stuff he does, maybe he can try to check that
out. How do you spell it?
C-R-I-A-N-Z-A. Crianza.
Okay.
Anything?
Yeah, I'm trying to find which one is.
All right.
Means literally oak aged wines.
Oh.
In Spain, vino con crianza, whatever, however you say it, refers to a wine crianza that has been matured in oak barrels. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's what it
is. So that's what it is. So, okay. So that's probably on bottles. We just get the ones from Spain that has some English on it, and they probably say aged in oak instead of Crianza.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Crisp describes a wine with moderately high acidity, refreshing and bright with a clean finish. And this is a crisp wine. Sauvignon Blanc, good example of a crisp wine. Cru, C-R-U. This is a French term. Cru generally refers to a vineyard or a group of vineyards that have similar characteristics. Okay. Grand Cru, meaning just similar characteristics of all those grapes there. Cru French, the term Cru is officially codified in some old world countries and regions. In Bordeaux, the highest quality wines are called Premier Crus, and in Burgundy, Grand Crus. So it actually refers to some very high quality wines when it's French. Now, Cru in other countries, like Italy, Cru can simply refer to a single vineyard bottling that may or may not be classified. So, wow, that is almost confusing. Depends on who's doing it. If it's French, it's highest quality. But if it's Italy, Cru just simply means single vineyard. So, there you go. Be sure you know what it is. It pronounces each of these. Let me click on the pronunciation of Cru. And it is simply Cru, correct. Okay. Now the one that has French is pronounced Cru. And others is pronounced Cru. It's the same thing on all three of them. They don't change any. Okay. Next one, Cru Beaujolais. These are wines from the 10 subregions. Amour, Julianus, Genus, Moulin-Avent, Fleury, Chirobo, Morgon, Rigné, Brûlé, and Côte de Brûlé, as opposed to the regional Beaujolais or Beaujolais Village AOCs. They are typically better in quality. So Cru Beaujolais is for 10 subregions, as opposed to just having a Beaujolais or a Beaujolais Village. Okay. Almost confusing, I understand. Crush, this harvest season when the grapes are picked and crushed. And cuvée, this is a blend of special lot of wine. So this is lot number 36. This is a cuvée. So We're done with the C's. We'll stop right there. We'll start with the D's next week. And is that correct? Yes. Letter C's and D's is that's next week. Yep. Okay. So we start with the D's next week. And we're done with that. We need a little ending glossary music here. Okay. Noticed an article, and I want to say work.
That was the ending music. I don't know if that came through. Man, it takes a while to.
Here we go. Yes, it did.
You just listened to this week's glossary and definitions by Ron. Tune in next week.
For continuation.
Yes. For continuation. Your show will begin in 5 seconds.
Four, three.
Three, two. Blog talk radio. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, no, not anymore. They deserve it. Anymore. So we don't want,
you know. That's true.
That's true. Not anymore. Okay, here we go. Let me see. Where is that one? Okay. This is out of the Chronicle? Or was this out of the... I don't know. I'll see in a second here. Could be either the Chronicle or out of the Tampa newspaper, Tampa St. Pete Times. So. Oh, engineer just brought me in a wine. So before we go into this next thing here, let's see what we are imbibing in tonight. It looks interesting. This, ooh, I can smell it. It was in the glass, and she just set it down. I can smell it. This is called Rescue Dog Wines. Rescue Dog Wines. Where did we get these? I don't remember this. She probably picked it up when she was out. This is a 2021 red wine blend from Lodi, California area. It says 50-51. I don't know. Oh, geez, that writing is so hard to read on that. I can't. It's that gold script on black, and it's impossible to read. It says Rescue Dog Wines out of Lodi, California, 2020. Our goal at Lott Family Cellars, L-O-T-T, Lott Family Cellars, is to produce world-class wines, as with this proprietary blend of red varietals made from grapes that have been sustainably farmed under the Lodi Rules Certification Program. There you go. Good. I'm glad we're finding and getting some of those. In addition, we hope to bring awareness to celebrate and provide financial support to the rescue dog movement. 50% of our profits go to support rescue dog organizations across America and abroad. Enjoy this full-bodied wine with almost anything from the grill, pasta dishes, or pizza with marinara sauce, or pizza with marinara sauce. Learn more about us and our unique mission at www.rescuedogwines.com. So there you go. You can look that up and get it. This is red wine blend, 14.5% alcohol by volume. It's a little bit high. Heavy bottle, though. I question heavy bottles anymore because of the cost of shipping. It has gotten so high, and you get these heavy bottles. It feels impressive to have a heavy bottle, but it's so expensive to ship now. Okay, Rescue Dog. This is a red blend. Oh, this has got a nice garnet color, very nice garnet color. Good clean edge on it. Not a discoloration or anything. A nice aroma. I was smelling it before. Yeah, I'm picking up a little petrol in this. I shouldn't be picking up that. There, it's opening up a little bit. It's starting to give me plum. Yeah, there's plum. Let me do a couple sips. Never judge on the first sip, always on the second. A little acidic, a little high on the acid, I think. But it's young. I think it could use a little aging. The tannins are definitely there. It's got aging potential. I wouldn't keep it too long. Maybe 5 years. 5 years in the bottle, I think, is going to bring this out and balance it out very nicely between this, the tannins and the acid and stuff. The acids dissipate quite well in the back of the throat. It doesn't carry down and into the throat. Some acids will do that. That just becomes overpowering and burns down into the esophagus. This one's just got a nice balance of acid with the tannins. I think those tannins could, again, 5 years, I think, would help this wine tremendously. Good aftertaste. Starts giving you this plumminess in the aftertaste that comes out in the nose. So it's got a plum undertone to just about everything on this wine, I think. I have no idea what the blend is because they say proprietary, so they're not going to tell us what blend they use, which is their way of saying we're not going to tell you. It's proprietary. They can tell us what grapes they use and not tell us the blend percentage, but I doubt they'll even do that on the website. So, pretty decent wine, though. Get a chance, pick it up. Excuse me. Get a chance, pick one up for two reasons. Number one reason is it helps dog rescues around the country and around the world. And the second reason is pretty decent wine. This has got a picture of, what is that dog supposed to be? I was going to say a Rottweiler, but it doesn't look like a Rottweiler. It's too big of ears. I don't know. Let's see, what's this say? I still can't, 50 of the, I don't know, I can't read that gold foil on the black background. It's just really hard for me to read, so I'm not going to try anymore. There you go. It's good. It's a good wine. It's something that I think would go very well with food. That acid that's coming out, and I think would be balanced well with food. The tannins aren't so heavy that you would lose any flavors of stuff. Like they said on the back, it goes well with wine here. Anything from the grill, pasta dishes, or pizza with marinara sauce. True, I can understand their descriptions on those. So, called Rescue Dog Wines out of Lodi. Good, decent wine. Okay. This article is out of the Chronicle, I think. Yes, it is. Out of the San Francisco Chronicle. This, and the reason it caught my eye, it says, fear rises over 200% tax threat on wines. Sub-headline, Trump's proposed tariffs on spirits from Europe called untenable. It's, Give me the highlights of the different sentences, different paragraphs there. It's latest episode in the ongoing trade war between U.S. and several of its longtime allies has thrown California winemakers, importers, and restaurants into a state of disarray. An organization, EU, is an organization Trump called one of the most hostile and abusive taxing and tariffing authorities in the world. His comment obviously didn't go over well with them. California wine business was uncertain of how seriously they should take the threat of the EU putting major tariffs on stuff coming here and our stuff going over there. California is a big shipper of wines overseas. So obviously they are quite upset. A Stuart Spencer, executive director of the Lodi Wine Grape Commission, who was in Europe on Thursday on a trip to promote Lodi wine, said most wine growers I know don't believe anything until they see it. So who knows? The whiplash from tariffs have caused the stock market to plunge, but that hasn't deterred Trump on his threat promise of tariffs. The economic turmoil of a period of transition makes markets are going to go up and they're going to go down, but it's going to take a while before they level off and everyone come to an agreement. Here, this paragraph, Trump threatened tariffs on goods from Canada and Mexico in February and again last week, but in both cases later decided to pause them. These tariffs are currently set to take effect in April. In several provinces in Canada responded by pulling all American alcohol products from their shelves. This is a devastating blow from the country that represents California wine's largest export market. The EU responded to the tariffs with reciprocal tariffs on American beef, poultry, motorcycles, bourbon, peanut butter, and jeans, which will take effect April 1st. Trump's planned alcohol tariffs are a new escalation in the trade war. And it says the EU does not seem likely to back down this time, which they did a little bit last time he was in office, 8 years ago when he was doing this. Trump is escalating the trade war he chose to start, said the French delegate minister for foreign trade. France is determined to respond with the European Commission and our partners. We will not give in to threats and will always protect our industries. And Trump said the new tariffs would be, quote, great for the wine and champagne businesses in the U.S. But Truth Social said the winery owners rejected that premise. It won't help our sales, said Marine Layer Wines, Baron Ziegler, owner of Marine Layer Wines and co-owner of Halcon Vineyard in Mendocino. It will only hurt the sales of of producers in Europe. Products are simply different. An apple can't be traded for an orange, he said. There is no champagne business in the U.S., many pointed out. Well, yeah, there is. Champagne can only be made in France. Okay, champagne. Yeah, we know that, but we have sparkling wines and different things here. So, yeah, that line is. White House and Treasury Department didn't respond for requests for comments. It's 200% tax on the products would be untenable, said, again, Marine Layer Wines, Ziegler. No one could continue to purchase European products. It would only hurt the consumer. And that's what I said earlier. I mean, they can sit there and they can posture all they want. They can fight and argue and throw things at each other. And the bottom line is going to hurt you and me and all of us who enjoy the French or European Union, the German, Spain, Portugal, Italy, all these wines that come over from the old world with a 200% tariff. Oh my gosh, you know, it's just going to put us out of the market for them. We're going to be stuck drinking our local wines, whether we like them or not, and we really should like them. I mean, if I may editorialize a little bit there, but we really should like them. But still, there's some French wines that I really enjoy. I pick up bottles of Beaujolais every once in a while. Not the real expensive ones, but like a good French Chardonnay. And the blends and all that coming out of France are just excellent. Italian Barberos, if you start adding 200% tariff on these things, it's going to be impossible to try to buy these. It's untenable. So it's an ongoing, the argument is still there. The argument for all this is still there. You know, what are you trying to do? It's not going to work and all that. And said the administration's erratic behavior has already made European importers reluctant to buy California wines. And it says, what if the European Union retaliates as the Canadian provinces did? There's just no hesitation right now. This is by Spencer of the Lodi Wine Grape Commission. Spencer does said he believes that California wines aren't operating on level playing fields, citing a 2003 trade policy called the Duty Drawback Program that can favor importers by allowing U.S. companies to receive a refund on some imported goods, including wine. He also pointed to the subsidies that the European Union spends to promote and strengthen its own wine industry, something the U.S. government doesn't do. The EU spends a significant amount of money promoting European wines in the U.S. marketplace. He said that puts us at a significant disadvantage. So there's something else, too. It should be interesting, and not a good interesting as it's starting to shape up. I like the wines coming out of the European Union. We can always turn to England, though, because England has a sparkling wines, a big sparkling wine market now. And so that's an alternative that we can look at to bring some more English wines over. Now, if he's going to put a big tariff on those also, then it's not going to work at all. But English sparkling wines are really doing quite well coming into their own. So we'll see. All this has been delayed until April 1st. It seems like all of it, Canada, Mexico, European Union, everything has been put away until the end of this month, which is only, 10, 12 days away. So, 10 days away. So we'll see what happens coming up. A lot of grapes not being harvested in California because of no market. And if they happen to hit this European Union, stop sending them over there, then even worse. I talked about the glutton of grapes not being sold last week, though. So, okay. Let's see. I've got a couple more that I wanted to read. And okay, I've read some of these. I need to get these out of here. Let's see. Oh, this is one I just looked up, or just saw a few days ago, actually. It says, chain could change perception of boxed wines. A famed Hawaiian restaurateur chain, has convinced a group of notable California wineries to try something quite controversial. Put their wine in a box. Yeah, you say, well, there's already wines in a box. Yeah, there is, but this is going a step further. Merriman's, the fine dining restaurant with locations on four Hawaiian islands, will replace several of its by-the-glass offerings with high-quality boxed wines. The initiative is part of Merriman's plans to become carbon neutral, with the goal of cutting the use of roughly 20,000 wine bottles a year. Wow, that's a lot. And they're as heavy as this bottle I have here. It's shipping it across the ocean to Miami can be, to Hawaii can be quite expensive. Chef, I'm having trouble reading, aren't I? Chef Peter Merriman founded his first restaurant on the Big Island in 1988. And pioneered a Hawaiian movement of locally sourced regional cuisine. On the beverage side, Merriman's is best known for its Mai Tai, topped with honey lilikai foam, but it also has one of Hawaii's most exciting and diverse wine lists. And here he says that the weight of the bottles being shipped over the ocean and every leg of the trip in trucks was a big contributor to Merriman's carbon footprint. Originally, we just started doing lighter bottles, but that seemed like such an incremental step, so we figured we'd take a bigger swing and go to boxed wines. Now, long associated with cheap, low-quality wines have gotten a bad rep being in the box. Some are priced over $100 and have popped into the market. You can go to the store, some wine shops now, and you will find boxed wines that are priced close to $100, if not over. Let's go on to the right spot here. The bottles are one of the largest contributors to wineries' overall carbon emissions. Shipping to Hawaii emits significantly more carbon than shipping anywhere else in the U.S. A case of wine in boxes is responsible for 80% less emissions than a case of wine in glass. One of the reasons why they're going box wine. High-end California wineries like Tablas Creek, Rhyme, and Bedrock have led the push and for this stigmatized alternative and hoping to change the perception. Tablas Creek came out with it about a year ago, and I had a chance to taste one of the Tablas Creek's box wines. High end, they're very, very good. Thus far, the program includes six hip California wineries: Napa Valley's Mathiasen, Frog's Leap and Fiala, Sonoma's Obsidian Wine Company, and Central Coast producers Lenny Colodo and Melville. And Servo have decided to sell the boxes to wine club members, tasting room visitors, and other restaurant accounts. So they got these others to start going with box, and they are running with it. Mathiasen, which boxed up its rosé for Merriman's, plans to offer it to its mailing list. The packaging is less expensive, costing the winery about $2 less per bottle going box. We have members that buy a case of the rosé every year for the summer. A bag in box is 4 bottles, and 3 boxes fit into a bigger box perfectly. Some of the others have been doing it quite well. Paso Robles Grenache from Colado, Lynn Colado owner Matt Trevison says that the blend is with a bit of Malverde, Syrah, and Carignan. He saved some for his customers, priced the box at $160, and sold out the first batch in 3 days. The feedback we're getting from everyone is that it's so nice to want to have a glass of wine and not have to open a whole bottle that night, not to feel that they have to drink 4 glasses over 3 days. Bosses extend shelf life and believed to stay fresh for about a month, while bottles only last for a few days. Over nearly 4 decades, Merriman's empire has expanded to 11 restaurants across Hawaii, including the more casual and vipey Monkey Pod Kitchen, which is rumored to be plotting a Bay Area location in San Francisco Bay Area. All 11 spots will soon serve some of the box wines. We're not sacrificing quality at all. I wanted to make sure that the wines were significantly better in quality than what someone would expect from a boxed wine. I wonder if they tell them it's a boxed wine when someone orders a wine and they go back and they pour it out of a box for the glass. I wonder if they come up and tell them this is a boxed wine from whomever here. And somebody orders a rosé, if they just go and pour it. Interesting. I'm sure they have to tell them. It would only seem right. Enough people out there are still a little snooty on that. So, Hawaiian Eatery, Merriam's, is going high-end boxed wines. Good for them. It's Tablas Creek has been promoting their wines for some time now. And the reason Tablas Creek went that direction was because of the carbon footprint. They figured out that a pallet full of boxed wines as opposed to a pallet full of bottles, the amount of wine that's on that pallet is about 4 times what the bottles would be, and the weight is outrageously different. It's unbelievable. And it's like this rescue dog I'm drinking tonight. This bottle is very heavy. When I was running the wine, I look for the lightest bottle I could possibly find because of the shipping cost. Shipping is outrageous. And I wasn't shipping a whole lot of wines to different places. And it was still a lot more than I wanted to spend on shipping. So, yeah, I can understand going with the box wines. Okay, let's see what else we have. Makers. I think I told you some of this article a couple, 3 weeks back. This is from when? Why don't you have a date on this thing? Okay, yeah, this is about non-alcoholic wines. I'm sure I hit on this article a couple weeks back. The non-alcoholic beverages has surpassed $500 million and have jumped 31% from the previous year, where non-alcoholic wines, however, haven't taken off as much. Non-alcoholic beer accounted for 86% of the market, and non-alcoholic spirits grew by 94%. So what year is that? 23. So wine hasn't jumped up that much. I'm thinking about, well, I've had non-alcoholic beer, but non-alcoholic spirits, I never had one. I enjoy bourbon. I enjoy scotch. What's going to happen to the bourbon and scotch when they take out the alcohol? Interesting point. I don't know. And the sales obviously are reflecting that. But this goes on and talks about the non-alcoholic wine market has consisted mostly of unfamiliar brands. And so people aren't really walking in and asking for it. The process of de-alcoholization is pretty much known for cheap wines. But they're now prioritizing the grapes and how the wine is made from that and taking out the alcohol. People used to come into the winery and ask me if we have non-alcoholic wine. And I'd say, go down to the grocery store and buy some Welch's grape juice, because what is non-alcoholic wine but grape juice? I've always had that attitude. I can't say that I've ever tasted a whole lot of non-alcoholic wine, because it just doesn't appeal to me. I just can't do it. excuse me. So if I'm gonna drink a wine, I'm gonna drink a wine. I don't want one that has no alcohol in it, which to me is just part of the flavors and taste and everything. So, but they talk about the release of the rosés and the Pinot Noir crop. Is larger for this Bouchain Vineyards, and the market is saturated with oversupply of grapes, so he's making non-alcoholic wine. The owner, what is it, Chris Kahani, and making non-alcoholic wine, a rosé, out of the surplus of grapes. And he said it's selling, so it's going to be around. Once they start this, it continues to sell and continue people start looking for it. And the current trend of no alcohol, not drinking, staying sober. What is the term that they use for it now? Sober friendly or something. I don't know. There's a term that uses it. That's becoming very popular now. And because of those trends, I think the trend of non-alcoholic wines and spirits and beer is just going to continue to climb and become more and more popular. I don't know. I'm going to have to see about getting a non-alcoholic wine and really scrutinizing it with an open mind and see what I think of it. I am definitely biased against it. I can't see the aromas and the mouthfeel and all that stuff coming out the same. But this article says that it is. They're coming out with all the stuff that's the same. The only difference is that it does not have the alcohol. They de-alcoholization process, and then they build the wine back up from that without fermenting it and adding the alcohol to it. So there you go. If you have any thoughts on non-alcoholic wines, email us allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. If you've had it, or if you're a fan, or if you drink it regularly, you know, let me know. No judging. I just don't see myself enjoying it yet. That doesn't mean I won't. So we'll see. This one guy, let's see, I just saw this. It says, Rieslings, Averno, Cabernet Franc and Merlot are the best grape varieties for non-alcoholic wine, while Pinot Noir and Chardonnay are terrible at it. So I'll be sure to avoid Pinot Noir and Chardonnay if I pick up a bottle of it. All right. Well, I believe I'm done for the night.
All righty. It is, wow, almost right at the top of the hour, 8:01 p.m. And I don't know of anything else going on this week. We will close the show for this Thursday. It is March the 20th. We'll be back next Thursday. That is March the 27th, 7 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Facebook and YouTube live on our pages. So check it out. And we're getting things set up again, like you mentioned at the top of the show, for a regular hosting platform and a place to store the episodes, because we had over 700 episodes at the other place and they closed in January. So it's like, so we're working on that. So things are working in the background, and we'll get back up soon. So to where it was. And I'll see if I can get the get a recording of the countdown, that is at least something similar to what we had. That is one thing we do miss, that so it's just strange, you know? We're sitting here talking, and normally the voice comes on and says your show begins in 1 minute. We're like, okay, well, we got 1 minute.
And
we don't have that.
They
here
started kind of five, yeah, four, yeah, three, two, one. Then we knew the show
and
was,
it's
starting
on.
Yeah. Here we're talking, yeah, and all of a sudden we look at it and it's, oh my gosh, it's 7:05. Right. You know, and
hit the button. We have to hit the button. It's a button. Yeah. So we'll have to we'll see what we can do about that. But thank y'all for tuning in. If you have any questions or comments for a future show, or if you'd like to be a guest on a future show, email that same address, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Those are the numbers, 101. Okay. Email that and @gmail.com. And Ronald, take care of it, and go through the vetting process. We'll get you scheduled up for a future show. Love to have you on. Thanks again. We'll talk to you next week. Be safe. Thank you.
Be safe out there. See you next week. See ya.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download BTR on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
All About Wine. Mm-hmm. That's it.